Greetings, folks. Good morning, and welcome to another episode of The Launch Space. Today, we're here with Damian Caro and Mike Robbins. Later on, Jason Helmick's going to join us as well. But today, we're talking about what's new with Azure PowerShell. We've got some really cool features to show you, some nice AI stuff and a few other things. I don't want to give too much away, but welcome, Damian. Welcome, Mike. And you want to tell us, Damian, you want to start and tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. hi, Brian, and hi, Mike. Good morning or good afternoon, depending on where you are in the world. I am the PM for Azure PowerShell, and we'll dive a bit more in what Azure PowerShell is and what we're going to what we have done in the last few months, but I will let Mike introduce himself.
Yes. Yeah, I'm the senior content developer for Azure PowerShell at Microsoft. I'm a former MVP and a big advocate of the PowerShell community.
All right. So awesome. So we have an interactive show here. We have chat that we're monitoring on aka.ms/learnTV for those of you over on the Microsoft developer YouTube. If you want to ask any questions, go to aka.ms/learnTV and you can ask them there, and we'll have interactive. I'll be speaking with the guests and making sure that your questions get answered. So thanks for joining. I'll let Damian and Mike take it away for now. Thanks.
Very good. Thanks, Brian. So as I mentioned, we have Mike in the show that is part of the team, but to build those Azure PowerShell modules, and we'll come deeper in a minute about it, it takes a team. And unfortunately, we couldn't get the entire team present today, but I would like to show their face, their developers, their engineers that have been working with us for the last few years. And I wanted to recognize the effort that they're putting in making sure that Azure PowerShell is actually running smooth, is getting to your hands every 3 weeks in a reliable manner. And I was saying that we have been doing Azure PowerShell for quite some time. You may have heard about Azure PowerShell few years ago, like 5 years ago when we started this journey. Azure PowerShell is basically a set of PowerShell modules that help whoever is a PowerShell developer to write a script that will manage Azure resources in the PowerShell way, which means you're managing those resources in form of objects. We have the consistency of PowerShell coming to Azure PowerShell, and it allows to connect those resources or those commandlets with other commandlets that come in PowerShell. And that's kind of the power of PowerShell, is having the ability to make that magic happen, which is not just AZ or Azure, but have the richness of the other modules coming along. A couple of years ago, we did a shift in the way we approach the Azure PowerShell. And we moved from what people may have heard of Azure RM to AZ. We'll talk more about that shift in a few slides, but AZ is really where we have done the investment in the last couple of years. AZ is not only cross-platform, which means it runs on Windows, on Mac, on Linux, but we have exactly the same level of functionality across those different environments. We also ensure that we actually support those environments exactly the same way. AZ, as I said, is where we have an investment. And as a result, today we have 95% of the Azure services supported with Azure PowerShell, which means that all of those services have a module that is available today. Some of them are still in preview, but all those modules are available for you to create resources and manage your Azure resources, Azure capabilities from PowerShell. As a total, it's about 127 modules available today, and we're going to go to 100%. That's our promise. We're almost there. We're hoping we would be at 100% right now, but we're just a little short. So keep up with us, and we'll be at 100% in just a short amount of time. We will continue to cover and add coverage for the Azure services as they come along, and we will make sure that we are within a GA timeframe. The other thing that we have been doing on AZ recently, in the last month, is really embracing the DevOps principles, embracing more the DevOps principle, I should say. I mean by that, we've embraced the idea of the time to market reduction. And as I was saying, you will see that module availability within GA timeframe of a service by having done that effort of reducing this time to market. We've also reduced the approach, or changed a bit the approach we were taking. And what we're doing is what we call shifting left. So one of the big change that is not necessarily visible from a customer point of view, from a consumer point of view of the modules, we've changed our approach, and we're using the REST API specs, the Swagger definition basically of our Azure services, to build the modules in an automated manner, which reduce not only the effort it takes to build those modules, but also make them more consistent with what the API is doing. And it allows us to be more efficient in how we build those modules, but also be closer to what is the reality of what you see. So the shifting left approach is going to really help allowing having modules that are very close to what the service is doing and improving your experience overall. The other thing that we have done by embracing DevOps principle is basically doing postmortems. You may have seen that recently when we shipped version 5.0 of AZ. Unfortunately, we released an AZ version and we introduced some breaking changes that were we introduced some bugs that impacted some of you as customers, and we have done a postmortem that we made public. And not only we made public the postmortem, but we've taken actions and commitments to our customers on what we're going to do to avoid those problems to happen again. This is something that is I would say a shift in the approach and really bringing that DevOps principle in the way we build the PowerShell modules. On the documentation front, and I want to acknowledge here that documentation is not only key for us, but it's something that we want to ensure has a high quality. The standards we put in doc is very high, and we want to have for each module that we ship at least one quick start available. Which means that when you have the module available, you will find in the service documentation at least one script that will tell you how to go from end to end on what we call the top scenario or the key scenario that they are highlighting. At the same time, we've worked on refreshing our conceptual documentation. And the conceptual documentation is really what Azure PowerShell is about. And really the focus we put here was on authentication, ensuring that we clarify the authentication piece, ensuring that we also have clarified how you get started with AZ PowerShell. So we've refreshed those pieces of documentation to make sure that we address the challenges that customers are facing, but also we've tried to increase the bar, the quality bar for the documentation. And we're going to keep working on that. And Mike is part of the team. He's spending his entire time looking at this and ensuring that we keep improving that area. The other thing that we that we've been observing by talking with customers, looking at issues that come through GitHub, and we'll come to that later, we've been working on improving what the success looks like with Azure PowerShell commandlets. There are different aspects of that problem. Like you run a command, it fails. One of the problem is understand what is the problem, understand the error message that is being exposed and returned. And the error message can come from a local environment, like this is something that is local to your box. And that's one type of problem. The other type of problem is the service is actually returning a message and we do not expose the message properly. So we've been working on improving those error messages and making them more understandable by humans, or I would say people that are not necessarily deep experts in Azure PowerShell understanding how to get to the error message. At the same time, for the modules where we have and we see a low success rate, we are looking at how we can increase the commandlet usability. And that means we are going to talk with customers, looking at what the commandlet looks like today, what are the challenges that they're facing with those commandlets and parameters, and improve that usability over time. So it's a journey. It's not something that's going to happen overnight. As I mentioned, we have 127 modules available, and we're going to increase those. But we want to make sure that we address that success rate over time and make it better for you to be productive with Azure PowerShell modules. So this is a journey. Again, we've started it a few months ago. We are continuing on this journey, and we are going to improve on those areas. At the same time, Azure PowerShell had a major refresh, and I mentioned that briefly in the previous slide. We did a version 5.0 back in November, and that version, that major version, was actually a foundation for some updates around security. And that version introduced two major areas where I'd like to spend some time because it's a major improvement that we put in AZ PowerShell. And I want to spend some time on this. The first one is authentication. So with AZ 5.0, we changed the libraries that we're using to manage the authentication with Azure. And that brought us few changes in the, I would say, the interaction you have with the modules. The first one is now we have what we call the browser flow. The browser flow is simply you run Connect AZ account and the browser is being launched. You just authenticate with your browser and then you're authenticated on your PowerShell environment, which is a different than what we had before, where you had to get the device login and copy paste that token to the browser. And that was kind of a broken experience. So we addressed that, make it more flawless when you have that interactive approach. We are also supporting what we call ADFS 2019. So if you have implemented Federation services with ADFS 2019, that is now supported and allows enterprise scenarios to be better integrated. And we heard some of our customers around username and password authentication. With PowerShell 7 now, we are bringing back the username and password authentication. It's something that we didn't have before, and then we've addressed that. Finally, as part of the authentication mechanism, we went some changes. Again, they're not visible for you as a user, but we've made some changes in the authentication mechanism to prevent man-in-the-middle type of attack. So you have someone that intercepts your request and would put themselves in the way to the authentication piece. It's an unlikely scenario to happen, but it's something that we've been working on to make sure that it's not happening. So all of those foundations are coming with AZ 5, as well as what we had for requests for a bit of time. And it was complicated for us to do it, but we wanted to implement it in this version of AZ. First of all, is giving access to the token cache. So token cache, it was complicated to access with the previous versions, and now you can use an get AZ access token cache commandlet to get a token, and you can use that token for execution of commandlets on other resources. Let me give you an example of how you can use that. You're authenticated to Azure, and let's say you want to run a SQL script, an Azure SQL script. You would have to authenticate to SQL on what we call the data plane. And you could reuse that access token with the get easy access token command to seamlessly run your SQL script on the SQL server without having to re-authenticate. So that enables a lot of scenarios that required access to this access token. But while we were exposing those access tokens through the commandlet, we also wanted to make sure that the token cache, which is where we actually store those tokens, are encrypted. The token cache is where we store the tokens that Azure is giving you to be authorized for running commands. And in the previous version of AZ, as well as the previous version of AZ Azure RM, those tokens were not encrypted. And that can create a security issue as well. And we wanted to address that. So that someone that is accessing the machine, like that is not you or the session, would not be able to access this token cache. So those are, in a nutshell, two areas of improvement that we made on the security front that are actually also setting the foundation for future improvements we're going to make on the security front. One of them is conditional access. It's a feature that comes in Azure. It can force like MFA kind of thing, and we're working on enabling this into Azure PowerShell. But those updates are foundations that we have added in order to enable those new scenarios going forward. You've heard me talking about AZ5. One thing that we that we follow for the AZ, and I have to clarify here a bit what AZ stands for and what AZ.star stands for. When we talk about Azure PowerShell, I said it's a set of modules, and all those modules are independent of each other. We have a module for compute named AZ.compute. We have a module named storage, AZ.storage, and they are managing all storage resources. We created an AZ module, which is basically a wrapper module that will pool AZ compute, AZ storage, and so on and so on and so on. AZ is a way to simplify access to all those AZ.something modules. In order to help you understand where you are at and which version is available, we apply semantic versions to AZ.something and to AZ as well. So AZ is the wrapper module that we usually refer to when we talk of Azure PowerShell. And we release AZ every 3 weeks. The release of AZ is somehow a milestone for us. And it kicks off a process where we will make AZ available in the PowerShell gallery. We will make AZ available in CloudShell at the same time. And we also update the documentation that is attached to all the modules that come with AZ at that time. So AZ evolves from version 4 to version 5 to version 5.1, 5.2, et cetera, et cetera. Under the cover, and it's something you don't really have to worry about, we attach versions of AZ compute storage, et cetera, that are compatible with each other, within each other. There are times where you have to do breaking change. As I said, those modules, AZ compute and so on, are just basically exposing what Azure is exposing in form of API. And sometimes those API have breaking change. That means, you know, they change a property, they change something in a service, and that has to be reflected in PowerShell in a way or another. What we're trying to do is reduce the burden of those changes to you, and we are making sure that we are not making more than two major releases or breaking change releases twice a year. So you can expect those breaking change to happen around springtime and around fall timeframe. That's when we try to have those breaking change release. But to be more precise, we expose those milestones on our GitHub repo. That's where you can find the dates. The link here is there to help you. And we have those dates public at least 2 months, 3 months ahead. That's kind of the time, the visibility we're giving to our customers. So that helps you prepare. That helps you understand also when is the next breaking change release coming, and prepare like time in your development cycles to review if those breaking changes are going to impact you or not. Now, we understand that those breaking changes can be problematic for you as customers, and you have to review your test and your script. So in order to allow you to potentially attach a script to a version of a PowerShell script, AZ PowerShell, we are also releasing on each of those milestones a Docker image. The Docker image has all the modules that are attached to a certain version of AZ within it. So you can use that image as long as you wish. We are not removing those. They're available, and we build on top of each other's. Those Docker containers can run in parallel. And the purpose is really to allow you to have a script that runs with AZ 4.5 and have another script that runs with version 5.1 on the same box. So that's the idea that we had behind the Docker image. We are welcoming any more feedback on this, any scenarios that you want to enable with the image that we haven't thought about. But basically, that's the idea. And finally, to help on the version management front, we have released in preview a new module called AZ Tools Installer. The installer module has a purpose, which is helping you find the right module. We have, as I said, 127 modules available. Those 127 modules work with different services. So we're trying to find a way to make it easier for you to get what module is used for HANA on Azure. What is the name of the module? How do I install it? Which is the right version? So that's the purpose behind the tools installer. The other thing with the tools installer, as we go along, we're adding new versions, and it can become complicated, and it can be actually problematic on some environments when you have all those versions piling up. So the tools installer allows you to remove previous versions of modules when you do the upgrade. We're still ironing some details around that scenario, but the idea is really to keep the AZ footprint as minimal as possible to not be a burden when you run into automation environments like Azure DevOps, GitHub Actions, or even your own agent. If you build your own agent, you want to kind of minimize the footprint that those modules would take. And by minimizing the footprint, it's not just the space it takes on disks, but it also reduces the amount of time it takes to install them. So that's what we are trying to address with the tools installer. Still in preview, we're collecting feedback on that. We don't have an ETA, I would say, to be GA, to be fair. So we're still working on improvements, and we'll have a few iterations before we go GA with this. The last piece that the tools installer is doing is verifying if there is any conflict on the box where you're installing AZ that would create a problematic situation. We've seen a lot of customers that stumble upon the fact that Azure RM modules were present on the box. And when they were trying to install AZ, it would create a certain number of complications, and it was not easy for them to remove them. And they had a problem here. So one of the things we are trying to address with the tools installer is checking if there's any presence of Azure RM, and if there is any, giving guidance on how to remove them properly and get in a clean state to be able to install AZ. Talking of Azure RM, I believe Mike has something to tell us.
Yes. So we actually have an official date now for the retirement of Azure RM, and it's the 29th of February, 2024. And it kind of goes along with the picture here. We're putting Azure RM out to pasture. What we would really like, we recommend that people go ahead and upgrade as soon as possible, because of course all the new developments going into the AZ PowerShell module, and it's like Damien said, it's cross-platform, it has security enhancements and so on. So there's no active development going into Azure RM unless there's some major security issue. And there's a few different ways to, you know, we reached out to several of our customers, and one of the pain points with moving from Azure RM to the AZ PowerShell module was they have scripts that are not trivial. They create entire environments. So that's not something to easily go through manually and update. So there's a few different ways to get from point A to point B as far as from Azure RM to the AZ PowerShell module. But let's talk about the installation of the different modules. We don't recommend having Azure RM and the AZ PowerShell module installed in the same PowerShell environment on the same system. So for example, you wouldn't want to have Azure RM and AZ installed in Windows PowerShell on the same box. The way you can get around that, if you want to install both of them on the same system, is you install Azure RM in Windows PowerShell, and you would install the AZ PowerShell module in PowerShell 7. And of course, the AZ PowerShell module is cross-platform, so you can install it on any system, you know, in PowerShell 7, not just on a Windows system. There's also a compatibility mode where you can enable Azure RM aliases in the AZ PowerShell module. So that's one way that you can run your older scripts, but really, the best way is to migrate your scripts to the new module, to the new commands. So the AZ PowerShell module also exists in Cloud Shell, so you could test your scripts in Cloud Shell without even installing the AZ PowerShell module. And as Damien mentioned, you could also download one of the Docker images and run them in a Docker container. So I've got another slide that we'll jump to now. And so to get past the pain point of manually upgrading your scripts, I mean, the best way, even better than having somebody who is knowledgeable with PowerShell to upgrade them, is to upgrade them automatically. So we have this Azure RM to AZ migration toolkit that can perform that. And I'm going to show you a demonstration of that. So my daily driver is PowerShell 7. I rarely use Windows PowerShell anymore, but I do test things in it. But I'm going to use Windows PowerShell because I want to prove a point. So in this environment, and I'll just run the previous command that I ran before. I'll go ahead and run it again. You can see I don't have any of the AZ. I don't have the AZ PowerShell module installed. Now I do have the migration module installed, but I'm going to show you how to install it again. So if you have Azure RM and you want to find out, hey, how compatible are my scripts with the AZ PowerShell module, you don't even need to install the AZ PowerShell module. You can install the migration toolkit, and you can check your scripts before you even install the AZ PowerShell module. So to install it, you use the install module commandlet. So this would be the command, and I'm specifying the repository parameter because I have more than one repository where that module is available. Typically, you could just omit that part of it, but that's one sure way to make sure that it installs. So that's how you would install it from the PowerShell gallery. I'm also going to show you, so I've got a series of scripts, and these are also not trivial scripts that I'm going to upgrade. Now you can point the tools to an individual script and upgrade it, or you can point to a whole folder. And the way the tools work, it's a multi-step process. You actually, it generates a plan, and I'll show you how it generates the plan. And then you can perform the upgrade after you see what the results of the plan are. So new AZ upgrade module plan. And one thing you have to do with your scripts, they have to be updated to use the latest version of the Azure Orion module, which is 6.131. And currently the tool only works with AZ module version of 5.20. That really doesn't matter. There are no breaking changes between the latest one as of today is 5.50. And as Damian mentioned, we release every 3 weeks. So it's a rapid moving product, but there are no breaking changes, as I said, between version 5.20 and 5.50. And I'm going to point it to the entire directory instead of a file itself. And what this command also does is, in addition to outputting the results, I'm going to store them in a variable named plan. So this will take just a minute. As I said, we've got a number of scripts. And you see we got something on the screen and it kind of flashed by. You see a column there that says ready to upgrade. Any of them that say ready to upgrade, there's nothing else you need to do other than perform the upgrade step. Now, what we want to know is, are there any that are not ready to upgrade? So by storing the results in a variable, you can actually work with that variable. So I'm going to pipe the contents of the variable to where object, and I'm going to filter on the plan result. And I want to see the ones that are not equal to ready to upgrade. And I want to see all the properties, so I'm going to pipe it to format list. So you can see there's only one that didn't upgrade. And the problem is here, it's under original. And you can see this is a commandlet parameter that is trying to upgrade. So what I want to do, what you would need to do is you would need to go investigate. So you could open up the file in VS Code. So you see, I've got this file open in VS Code, and it looks like I already had it open, but it would have opened it otherwise. But this is the point where it fails. And it's because that's not a valid parameter name. So this script actually doesn't even work to start with. One of the features we recently added was the ability to upgrade scripts that use splatting. There are a couple limitations. So if you're in PowerShell, you can actually specify a parameter name. And as long as you type enough of it so it's non-ambiguous, then you could not type the entire thing. Well, of course, the script wouldn't do that. But if you're doing that, you shouldn't be doing that in your scripts anyway, because you wouldn't be following best practices, because you should be using full commandlet and parameter names. So anyway, that you would go investigate and find out, okay, what's the problem here? And you can see the replacement column here is blank. So it means it found a commandlet parameter, and the original parameter name is this name, and the replacement is non-existent. Now, you can, just like anything else in PowerShell, you can work with this data. You can actually get a list of the original and replacement items in addition to the upgrade type. So let's just do that real quick. And so we'll get the original and the replacement. And let's see if that works. So it does. So you could look at this list and you could say, hey, the commandlet named set Azure RM resource is going to be replaced by set AZ resource. And one thing to notice here is look how long the Azure RM commands are and look how short the AZ command names are. So that's one thing that I really like, because there are a number of commands, and when you start typing part of it in and you try to tab expand it, the length of the commands, it's just crazy with the older commands, how long they are. So I prefer the shorter commands. And later in our presentation,
now he's off. Hey, hey, Mike, you're on mute. I don't know if you can hear us. I can see the little mute icon on your, somehow it, your mic went on mute. Still can't hear you. I hope you can hear me. I don't think so. Live broadcast television, ladies and gentlemen. Mike, I don't know if you can hear me. Yeah, I guess he can't see either. Oh, no. Well, I'm sure he's saying something very critical and important right now. We will have to get him. I think we'll have to go forward. I apologize for that. I think what we'll do, I think I was going to add to the talk before that happened was one of the ways to do a side-by-side installation that I discovered is you can have your old PowerShell, the PowerShell RM on Windows, and then you can use the Windows subsystem for Linux to run the new PowerShell because it's multi-platform. So that's kind of cool. Mike is, in fact, continuing on with the presentation and showing us something I was going to show you, which is there is a PowerShell team on GitHub. If you go to github.com/PowerShell, you'll see the PowerShell open source code that's there. There's also there's an Azure Dash PowerShell which lists a bunch of commandlets as well. So github.com/Azure/Azure-PowerShell actually has a bunch of commandlets you can use as well.
Actually, the Azure Dash is the repository where all the work that we are doing is located. So if anyone wants to look at the code, contribute, we actually welcome pull requests. We also welcome issues. And actually, I was going to get there. That was my slide. We actually welcome any contribution from the community. And regardless, it can be a typo in an example or in the documentation, or it can be something more significant, like, oh yeah, I want to create a new commandlet for this module, and here's my contribution. And we're actually looking at those contributions, all of them.
Cool, great, yeah, no, that's wonderful. It's good that everyone knows that things are on GitHub and things are open source, and it is multi-platform, meaning it runs on Linux and Mac as well as Windows. So that's great. So let's bring on Jason. Jason's got some more info to show us, some more things that he wants to talk about in terms of some new cool advancements. So take it away, Damien and Jason. Thank you.
All right. So let's move on. And we're going to talk about AZ Predictor. As we like to say, it's where AI meets PowerShell for Azure. So Jason, do you want to talk about you for a minute?
Yeah, I'm a PM on the PowerShell team, very excited to talk about our new predictions.
Cool. So, before we go into what AZ Predictor is about, I wanted to step back and look at what customers have been telling us. And it comes to, we have 4,000 commandlets, and I don't know how many parameters with the Azure modules. I made some quotes from customers telling us about the name of the function. Sometimes it's difficult to remember them or to deduce their name. Or I find Azure commandlet to be unintuitive and obtuse. It shows that there is a pain point here. As I mentioned earlier, we do usability studies on the PowerShell command, Azure PowerShell commandlet, and we discovered that the tab completion, becomes less useful when you have so many commandlets. It all starts with new dash az something, and then what is after the az? And then we've seen customers in labs making mistakes when they're switching between the help and the code. Like, they have the help online, they try to copy it in their command, and it doesn't work. So we started to think, and I remember, Jason, we had some discussions a month ago about how can we help. And that's how we started to imagine AZ Predictor. And the purpose was really to bring that help directly to the developer's fingertips. But before, and I don't want to go further in AZ Predictor, we're going to have a demo, and I would like to let you talk about what are the foundations to get there.
Thanks, Damien. You know what, Damien, one of the major parts to the success of PowerShell is that PowerShell, well, helps you be successful. So what we wanted to do was create a feature in PowerShell that you're now using as well, called Predictive IntelliSense. And what this is an addition to the concept of tab completion that assists the user in successfully completing entire commands. So this enables new and experienced users to discover, edit, execute full commands based upon predictions matched from their own history. And I'm going to show this to you. As a matter of fact, let me go to a demo and kind of get started into showing you what I'm talking about here. First of all, I'm going to use our latest preview release of PowerShell 7.2 Preview 3. Check it out if you get a chance, but that's not necessarily required. We'll kind of get to that in a minute. Now, many of you know that tab completion is very helpful. So if I just start typing get dash C and I start hitting the tab key, PowerShell is going to help me find that commandlet. In fact, the more you type in, the more that PowerShell can help direct you right away. Oh, get child item, that's what I wanted. And if I put in a dash for a parameter, the tab key will help me discover the parameter that I want. This is so that you don't have to memorize everything. And with the thousands of commandlets that we have, it would be impossible to do it anyways. Well, we took a look around at the industry. We wanted to help not only further help with this, but help with entire commands. Because while this helps me find a commandlet or a parameter, if I've typed something 2 weeks ago and I did it successfully, is it possible that maybe PowerShell could help me remember what I typed successfully a couple of weeks ago? That's what I want to enable for you. Now, shortly, I'll show you where to get the bits for this. But let me just turn it on right now. This is a new feature in PS Readline. So we have something called PS Readline option, and I'm going to turn on a parameter called prediction source, which right now is set to none, and I'm going to set it to history. Now, what this means is that PowerShell will look through my history and determine if there is a prediction from my history that it could offer me to help me out. So let me turn this on, and I'm going to type get ch. Now, you might be seeing a prediction on my screen right now, but it's really hard to read. It's in a very faint gray color, and this is the default color. Now, the reason for this is when we created this feature, we were looking around at the industry. People like, if you've used Fish Shell or Z Shell, they have auto suggestions similar to this, and it's the same color that they use on your local machine. This is actually a great color to use, but in displaying, it's a little tough. So let me change the color. Here's the best part. You can set the color of your predictions to anything that you want. Now, I'm going to put in an example here just to show you one example of what you can do. And this happens to be the favorite one of my lead engineer, Steve Lees. This is his favorite. When you start typing something, everything in the highlighted section is part of the prediction. So as you can see on my screen right now, I've typed get ch, but it looked through my history and it said, you know, I found something that you typed successfully before. Is this what you want? And so I'm looking at it going, yeah, that's what I want. I can accept that. I can also go back through and edit this and make changes to it as I move through it. And I can, of course, execute it, which I'm not going to do right now because I want to change the color to one other thing. As I was telling you, you can set your colors to whatever you want. And the background highlighting is awesome, but I kind of prefer something a little bit more subtle than that. And now when I start to type, you can see on my screen in a light green what my prediction is. Now, predictions are kind of nifty. So if I start typing something like, let's say, it doesn't have to be PowerShell commands. It could be, I do a lot of Git commands. Oh, you can see it's predicting the last, one of the last things I typed. But what you might be saying to yourself is, wait a minute, I do a lot of Git commands too. And I've got like five or six, and it's just showing me the last one. What I'm showing you right now is these are predictions in what we call inline view. They're all on a single line, easy for you to see and accept. But if you want, you can get what we call list view. You simply reach up, press the F2 key, and now you get a drop down of what we found in your history that matches. And this is live, which means I can start typing. And as I type, it starts finding what matches the most closely in my history. So if I start typing Git commands, you can see a list. And I'm like, oh, that's what I want. I'm doing a Git commit, and that's what I forgot to type in. So you get a lot of options. So F2 switches you between this list view and between what we call inline view. And that's basically what a prediction is. Now it's using the history from PS Readline, which is across all your sessions. So this is a great way to help accelerate you on things that you've been done successfully. But wait, one quick thing though, Damien, here's something that's really cool. Is what I'm doing is I'm demonstrating in predictive IntelliSense right now through Windows on PowerShell 7. Well, it just so happens that if you want to enable predictions, I'm going to bring up Windows PowerShell 5.1. And guess what? Yep, predictions work there too. But here's the most important piece. If you're using PowerShell, you probably or maybe might be using it like I do, which is cross-platform. So let me go over to my Mac real quick and bring up Terminal in my Mac. And the question is, does this all work here? Yes, all of this works here so that you can have predictions completely cross-platform. Now, where do you get this? Now, we have a slide, and I can show you the slide here, but instead of showing the slide real quick, let me just show you what you need today to get this experience on your machine. And what that is you can find this module. It helps if I type find module correct. Oh, hey, thank you, Predictor. That's exactly what I wanted to show. So you can do a find module on PS Readline. Today, you need to have the dash allow pre-release parameter in there. And what you're going to find is 2.2.0 beta 2 of PS Readline. You install that module and you can enable your predictions and start working with historical based predictions. But you know, Damien, here's kind of where you came in. We started working on doing these historical predictions and you thought, hey, there might be something nifty here. And you really went, let's say, beyond what we our expectations.
Well, we we thought that the prediction that AC Predict that that Predictive IntelliSense brings can help our customers on Azure be more efficient. And let's switch my machine so I can show you how it looks and how it works. So we have the module called AZ Predictor, and it's already enabled. So you have to run that command enable AZ Predictor. You can run it for all sessions if you really want to have it across sessions, across users. I've already done that. And I'm going to do something that is very common in the world of Azure. I'm going to do a new, look at that.
Hey, I love it. Predictor
is actually suggesting me that I may want to do an AZ resource group. That sounds cool. That's exactly what I wanted to do. So I just accepted the suggestion with the right arrow. And now I'm going to navigate through the parameters with the Alt A, and I can switch between the name of the resource group or the location. So the name, let's do MS Learn TV. And you see, as I'm typing, it recognizes that maybe I'm going to use a tag. I should be using a tag because that's kind of a thing that makes sense. And I'm going to use owner equals dcaro. Location, I'm going to do a location that I like very much, West Europe. And I'm accepting the tag here. Let's run that. So I'm basically running a creation of a resource group in my subscription. I mean, nothing very fancy here. However, what do I do after that? Well, maybe I'm going to create something that is common across VMs and services. Let's go for a storage account. And here it goes. The prediction is actually showing me, again, the storage account as my first option. Now, I don't necessarily want to create a storage account. I may have other options that may interest me. So I'm going to switch to with the list view that you've demonstrated here. And let's look at here. In the list, we have predictions coming from Easy Predictor and predictions coming from the history. So I have information master. Coming from, sorry?
You are a Zoom it master.
Yes. So I have three histories coming here. And that's coming from the history of PowerShell. And then I have seven predictions coming from my Easy Predictor. And I can browse through all those predictions or suggestions to pick the one that makes more sense for what I want to achieve. So storage account was the one I was aiming for, but the other one that may make sense is a resource group deployment, as creating resource group deployment for a template that makes a lot of sense as well. And we may also just want to create a new VM. There's two things I want to highlight here. I don't know if you've paid attention here, but the resource group name and the locations are the same than the resource group that I have created before. So I'm using the MS LearnTV, so the predictor is understanding that I have created a resource group, and it makes sense to reuse that resource group name for my next operations.
Hey, Damien, can I ask you a quick question? I mean, you're reusing that resource group name. So here's my question. My question is really about privacy. Are you like collecting the property information that I'm typing in?
Absolutely not. We're not collecting any of the values of the parameters. What happened is the predictor being installed locally keeps in memory the information about the resource group name that you've been using, the location that you have been using, and suggests them as a local override of the values that come from the prediction. So all of that remains on your box, like the history that you have. Nothing goes out of the box.
So you're not collecting my passwords?
Absolutely not. We would never do that. So the the predictor here, I'm going to move away from there. So the predictor is going to improve over time as more customers are going to use it. We're actually going to release a new version of the predictor module later today. So it's extremely fresh. It's going to be version 0.2.0, and it has to be installed on top of PowerShell 7.2 and PS Readline 2.2 beta 2. I think I have to go here to my slide to get the exact version numbers. So PowerShell 7.2 Preview 3, PS Readline 2.2 Beta 2, and AZ Tools Predictor version 0.2.0 that is going to be published in the gallery at some point tonight. So if you can hold until later tonight to install it, please do so. And then you run the Enable AZ Predictor or session to ensure that it's being loaded automatically in your environment.
Well, from my perspective, I think that's an amazing addition to, you know, we started with predictive intelligence and giving you historical predictions to help accelerate you if you've already been successful. What I think that this really shows, especially being ML based, is the other thing that we wanted to do, which was we can help teach people how to use the commandlets. And I think with all of the commandlets that are out there, especially for Azure PowerShell, being able to help teach people how to get through them is just fantastic. I think that's amazing.
I fully agree. And I'm the first one that is using it. I don't know all the commands that we that we publish. And half of the time I have issues to deal with, or I have customers reaching out to me, and I have to go to my command line to understand what needs to be done. I just love Predictor because it really helps me to go straight to the point when I have to type those commands.
That's awesome.
It is really helpful in my view. It's, again, it's in preview. We would like to get more people to use it. So as many of you can actually try it out and tell us what you think, so we can actually make it better and improve the suggestions that we're making. That's really what we're aiming for in the next in the next few months.
Great. So I did want to share a few resources that you can get to related to this as well. Damien just showed a couple of different versions, but here on my screen, I just want to show, first of all, the launch space is where you can find all the links that we're going to that are in the show today, aka.ms/the launch space. You can also go to aka.ms/the launch space PowerShell, all one word, to get directly to the page that we have today. We also have PowerShell documentation, which is out there. Some really, really good information there on getting started. There's also an introduction to PowerShell. So Microsoft Learn is a great place to get to know PowerShell in an interactive way. Yeah, we have docs and we have tutorials, but Microsoft Learn takes it one more level where you can actually interactively play around with some of the documentation that we share with you and see what the results are right there on screen without having a Azure account. And it also ties into certification. So you can actually use the information that you learn in the Learn modules to get certifications as well. Last but not least, so I showed this screen a little earlier, but there's the PowerShell team GitHub. So all of the things that everyone showed today is on GitHub. It's open source. And if you go to github.com/PowerShell, you'll get to this page. There's a PowerShell repo here. And Damien, is this the repo that you mentioned before that has the open source? Is PowerShell PowerShell, or is it Azure PowerShell? Okay, so it's this one. Okay, so PowerShell is the original, I believe, and then the newer version, the Azure, the PowerShell Core. Correct me if I'm wrong. There is our Azure-PowerShell, and that's where you can actually get the info. There's also PowerShell RFC. If you want to provide feedback on the development process that we have for PowerShell, there is a link here to the process that we use for that. And if people want to contribute and share information, that can be done here. Is that that's basically the right place to do that, correct?
Yeah, so PowerShell is, well, it's PowerShell. That's the shell and the language that helps everybody do this, does their automation. And AZ, yeah, or Azure PowerShell is the is one of the many extensions from PowerShell. So they're both okay, current and brand new.
Okay. All right. But all of the information, I guess, you can get is on PowerShell here at github.com/PowerShell. And there's some really cool resources there as well. Also, there were some demos today with Visual Studio Code. There is a Visual Studio Code extension for PowerShell as well, which helps. Now, does the Visual Studio Code extension support the predictor that we were looking at today?
Hey, Brian, you know what, Brian? That's a great question. That is work that we're taking a look at right now. So Visual Studio Code doesn't currently have predictions in it, but we're working with the team right now to take a look at that.
Okay, cool. Well, that's great. Last but not least, I want to show this. So if you want to use the predictors, use them in the command line. And for any more information on this session, check out aka.ms/the launch space PowerShell. I just want to thank Damien, Jason, and Mike for coming on today. We had some fun with live broadcasts, but everything worked out in the end. I think it was great info. And I predicted that the predictor will be a big hit. So thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll see you.